doing this modeling, and I just wanted to pursue something with some more depth. And I started taking these classes, and I was like, wow, there's a whole nother level to this when you add the actual talking, moving, speaking side to it.
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
Hey, how are you? I'm Mark. Glad to have you back. Another episode of Story and Craft. Welcome if you are new. If you haven't been here before, glad to have you by. If you've been here before, thanks for coming back. Appreciate it. Took a couple weeks off, little hiatus, vacation time with my teenagers, did the cruise thing around the Caribbean. Needed a little bit of sun, but back with you right now for a great episode with actor Logan McCrae. Really interesting story. He was a fashion model, then did the transition to being a film and television actor. So we'll discuss his new role with Daisy Edgar Jones, co-starring in the new film Where the Crawdads Sing. He's also in the Apple TV show Blackbird. Logan and I touch base on his film career. Also, you know me, love talking food. We talk about great places to eat around New Orleans. And hey, don't forget, Story and Craft Pod.com is the website, storyandcraftpod.com. Stop by. Of course, we're on your favorite podcast app, so check that out. Make sure to subscribe so you get that little notification every week when a new episode comes out. Well, let's get after it. Today, it's Logan McCrae Day on Story and Craft. So how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, my friend. Good to connect with you today. Where are you at today?
I am in New Orleans. Where are you?
I am in Metairie.
Oh,
right down the
go.
Way from
We're
you.
Close.
Isn't that wild? You are the of all the people I've spoken with, you're the nearest one to me. Are you a New Orleanian?
I'm not. My wife is from here, and we now live here. But yeah.
That's the way it works. I try to explain to people, if you marry somebody, whether you even if you're still married or not or whatever, you know, you end up at least posting up in New Orleans for a period of time. You know, I think that's kind of the deal. You know,
yes.
I'm originally from Dallas myself, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. As soon as I tell somebody my wife's from here, and they're like, oh yeah, well that makes total sense then that you're here.
And for those listening growing in Metairie, what's that? Suburban New Orleans, you know, it's or as they say down here, Metairie,
yes.
You know. So what part of New Orleans are y'all in?
We're uptown.
Oh, okay. Okay. My daughter goes to Loyola. My son will be going to Loyola next year as well. So they're right down the way from you.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
In fact, I was just speaking with a chef, Robert Irvine, you know, from your guy from Food Network and whatnot. And I was saying, my oldest daughter who's at Loyola, she goes down to Subway. Nothing against Subway. Nothing against them. But she goes there a lot. I'm going, man, you are just a streetcar ride or a walk away from some really great places. What are you going there so much for? But she's a college kid, so you know how that goes.
Right. It's a very easy college meal.
And so where are you from originally?
Originally from Colorado. I grew up just outside of Boulder.
Okay, very good, very good. I got that's from what I understand, that's kind of a hot place to move right now.
Oh, it's completely different from what I grew up with and everything. It's kind of become this kind of like tech hub now. It's interesting. It's a beautiful location, so I understand the draw.
Yeah, I have a good friend of mine. We're having that conversation of when we are finally empty nesters, and I'm like, 2 years away or something like that. And my youngest is 16, and she's like, no, I'm moving to Boulder, man. That's like, I'm a mountain person. I'm like, well, no, I'm kind of a beach person myself. So
I think I would take a beach after Boulder.
Yeah, but you know, being in New Orleans, we have that hurricane thing, or as my oldest daughter says, she said, we call them unicorns now. We don't say the H word, you know, Hurricane Ida. You know, this right here is a new studio because my other place got just wrecked by Hurricane Ida back in August. So anything that happens on August 29th, just not good for New Orleans. Now, just a little bit of backstory here. So you're acting now, but am I correct in thinking you did some modeling as well, correct?
Yeah, that's kind of how I fell into the acting. I was going to school. I actually went to school in Boulder, University of Colorado, and one summer I was like, you know what, I'm going to go out to New York City, try this whole modeling thing, and I never left. I ended up staying in New York City for 12 plus years. I have some family on the East Coast, so I had them close by, but. That's how I ended up in New York and ended up staying there for a while. And while modeling, slowly fell into all of the acting.
Now, the modeling Was it mostly like runway print?
It was mostly print stuff. I mean, the runway stuff is completely different. It's, you know, I'm more of a athletic build, whereas the runway was a little bit thinner than what I was. I grew up playing sports and whatnot. So, the runway stuff wasn't quite for me.
Yeah, that's the closest I came to a runway was when I learned how to fly back in the 90s. You know, it's the only runway they let me on. Anything else is just going to be just dangerous, you know. So what did you do, any kind of training? Did you do any kind of acting coaches, classes, stuff like that? Or did you just kind of jump into it?
Yeah, so it started with just a very basic like commercial class, and I was taking a commercial, I guess, acting class just to kind of get your angles and whatnot down. And from there, I was like, okay, well, what's next? I was always kind of the type of person where I'm like, okay, I mastered that skill, so what do we do next? And somebody said, well, go to a real acting class, go to a sensory class. And I ended up going to a sensory class with this phenomenal teacher on the Upper West Side. Her name is Sheila Gray. And she taught this sensory class, and I fell in love with it. It just brought emotions and whatnot out of me that I didn't necessarily know were there. And I did some sensory and some improv through her. And because of her, I actually was able to start auditioning with it, because she actually reached out to a representative at my commercial agency and was like, hey, you should really be doing some auditions because he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So through the work, it kind of fell into that.
Yeah, and that's so this is all happening up in New York now. I know New Orleans for a period of time was doing really, really well, getting a lot of work, and then they killed the tax credit, and then all that work went up to Atlanta or Georgia. Are you bouncing back and forth to New York or out of town, or are you just hanging out and just kind of going wherever the projects are?
Yeah, I'm following projects at this point in time. You know, I think COVID shifted the acting landscape in what I see as a very positive way, in the sense that everything's self-tape. Mm-hmm. You know, they're no longer asking people to come in for those auditions.
Isn't that a time saver? Everybody I'm talking to is talking about how like that just finally kind of shifted that gear and just said, you know what, if you can do it at home, just do it. You know, and it seems like it's not really going back to in-person as much.
Yeah, and I look at it as I think it's actually more conducive to the craft, because when you actually do make it on set, you don't just get one opportunity most of the time. Of course, there are some directors out there that maybe you'll go one time through, but you know, they're only going to do that once they've gotten what they need out of the scene.
That's a really great way of putting it, that on set you are doing the takes that until they feel like they've locked in. And if you're doing it at home, you're doing kind of the same thing. We all know you go in for an audition. It's like, hey, that was great. We'll be in touch. And you're out the door.
Totally, totally. And I think, you know, I think it gives everyone the opportunity to kind of show them their best selves to casting and directors and whatnot, that it's just kind of changed the landscape. And I think it's allowed everyone to really show their talents and allowed me to, you know, post up in New Orleans, which I'm okay with.
I know Where the Crawdads Sing is the latest. So that project, where did y'all shoot?
So that project shot in the greater New Orleans area, which was extremely convenient for me.
Oh, isn't that nice?
I mean, anytime you can sleep in your own bed, you always have to take that. It was, you know, the way that they shot it and everything here, and I think the landscape of areas just outside of New Orleans was very conducive and appropriate for what the storyline was of Where the Crawdads Sing, because my character and the main character Kaya grew up on the marsh, is what they call it in the book, which, you know, is basically swampland. So it's very easy to find in the greater New Orleans area.
Where were y'all shooting roughly? Like in the New Orleans area?
Yeah, so it was just outside of New Orleans. It was actually a little bit on the North Shore, and they found a state park that actually allowed them to build a replica of the home in the state park right on the water. So it was amazing, because you show up and it's like, oh, there's the family home, and everything was real, and it left very little to the imagination that you saw the family home and it was 20 feet right from the river. So everything was exactly what you pictured in your mind when you read the book and the description of the home. It was really cool, and I think it just made the experience that much more real.
So when did y'all shoot this?
It was shot May of last year, so May of 2021. There was a little bit of delay. They made it so accurate that it was 20 feet away from the water. And I don't know if you remember last year we got a lot of rain last year in May, and they had to shut down production a little while because it actually took on so much water that there was water, if you're 20 feet away from the river, the water was suddenly up to the house when we got so much rain. So it was very, very true to living in the marsh swamp that it everybody dealt with it. It was funny.
Yeah, that was, it's so funny that whenever I've shot things here, and I took a little bit of a hiatus from doing anything on camera, but it was wild because it's like they give you a location to go to. I was like, wow, I didn't even know this part of the city existed. Yeah, I'm originally from Texas, so I'm still kind of, even though I've been here on and off for 20 years, I still am learning my way around. And it is very nice. And that's kind of like what it's like to live in LA and shoot a lot in LA. Is like you just go down to the studio, come back home, not bad. Now, before that, you had done, which something I haven't had a chance to see yet, Mouthful of Air.
Yeah,
that's with Amanda Seyfried. I think Paul Giamatti was in that as well. Did you do anything with him?
Yeah, the cast was phenomenal. I did not have any scenes with Paul. I actually didn't even have a chance to meet him, unfortunately. It was Amanda and Britt Robertson. There was a few people, but yeah, unfortunately, me and Paul didn't get a chance to kind of cross paths.
Yeah, Britt Robertson. She seems like she's just a ball of energy. She's fun to watch.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, kind of going back to growing up in Boulder, was this even on your radar? Were you like watching movies going, man, that's something I kind of want to do one day?
Yeah, I think it was, totally. I mean, I don't know if you'd consider Colorado like Midwestern, but it was just kind of that very traditional upbringing. I mean, I have two brothers, and it was sports all day, every day is what our lives were growing up, kind of. So it really wasn't on the radar. When I got to college, film started to kind of creep in there just in general interest and stuff. You start to take your own liking when you finally have your own choice of what you're watching. So friends and I would start viewing films, but the interest wasn't necessarily there for me to partake in it. It was kind of in New York with the modeling where I was doing this modeling, and I finally got to the point as I was like, I really would love to do something with more depth. I think the modeling taught me a lot, and I love it with the camera sense is with modeling, it teaches you angles very well. So I think marks and angles and those types of things came very easy to me. And I just wanted to pursue something with some more depth. And I started taking these classes and I was like, wow, there's a whole nother level to this when you add the actual talking, moving, speaking side to it.
Well, now, is this something that was kind of wired into your DNA? Like, were your parents, any one of them, did anything creatively, or were they far from the creative ecosystem?
So my parents, not, but my grandmother on my father's side, she still to this day actually directs theater and musical theater in New Jersey, and she's in her 90s, so she still is going, and she does this. It's her one love, and used to sing a lot back in the day, and she was actually in some type of beauty pageant as well back in the day. I can't remember what it was, but so on her side of it, she had that creativity stuff going on. So it's in there somewhere for me, but it wasn't really anything that either one of my parents pursued or kind of pushed us towards either.
My grandmother was the same thing. My family's from, half of them, from Denver. So she went to LA, and that's where my grandparents met. But she was out there, and she'd done some singing and some other stuff. And I was thinking, well, maybe that's where I got it from. I don't know, but it's kind of funny that, I did the very opposite of pretty much everybody in my family. Were your folks, were they kind of down with it? Like, okay, go to New York, do your thing. Or were they kind of like, have something to fall back on? What were they guiding you towards?
It's one thing, and almost to a fault, but I thank them so much for it, is I have had the most supportive parents of anything that I've ever pursued. And it's been amazing because they've always allowed me to kind of go after those things that I wanted to. and they've always cared, and they've almost had this blind faith that I would do well in whatever I chose to pursue, which is, it's great. But you know, there's the other side of it as well, where you kind of you have to be a little more realistic, because I think my parents just, you know, they are so loving and supportive that sometimes I'm like, okay, but am I making the right choice, even though they're saying I am? So I was lucky in that sense, but they have been extremely supportive in anything that I've pursued.
Yeah, you kind of want to feel those guardrails a little bit, going, am I doing the right thing here? You know, I don't want to I think that's a big part of being in your 20s, is getting out there making some mistakes, you know, then that way you kind of you get a feel for where you're at, you know. And I think it's a natural transition to do the thing from, like, I know, like Ian Somerhalder, he actually, family lives on the North Shore. He went from the modeling thing into acting. You know, it's funny, I never even thought about the whole idea of hitting marks and angles and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, that's a big part of the modeling thing, and that transitions.
You really do learn all of it. And I think, you know, the modeling side, and just in terms of what my experience was from all of it and stuff, I think that the travel and just the independence that the modeling stuff taught me was a different type of education. And I think that's kind of what my parents saw that they were okay with. I had the opportunities through modeling to travel truly to places I never would have ever gone to. I mean, the first international job I ever booked was to Bali. And, I never would have been in Bali in my life had it not happened. Yeah. So, and I think when you're going across the world by yourself and having to just get yourself to places and experience different cultures, I think there's a level of education in that that's so different than, you know, what a traditional education is, but it means something. And I think that was a big thing that my parents were like, okay, you know, there is something substantial in what he's doing on that side.
Yeah, I think traveling, I was talking to the chef Robert Irvine a little while ago, and we were talking about Anthony Bourdain. I'm going, that's the life I want. You know, he was my spirit animal. I was like, that, to be able to travel, to sit down and eat with different people. And then the conversation drifted a moment into, like, you know, if we all collectively as a culture, as a species, sat down and had meals together, you realize, oh, we're more alike than we are different.
100%.
One of the greatest educations, and I wish I could have done more of that, you know. As I mentioned, once my youngest graduates from high school, I think that's on the radar.
Yeah.
What kind of projects are you looking to start? You know, if I say, here's a bucket list of the kind of projects, or maybe even the actors or directors, what kind of things would you like to find on your resume, as they say, as time progresses?
You know, I lean back into the idea that I would love to give a true character arc, even just in some. I don't know if I could sit there and give 9 seasons to something, but I mean, of course, anyone would take it as an actor. But I just would love to have the time, and it just, even, I mean, ideal would be something along the lines of like a limited series where you can somewhat see a character through. And I think that's the biggest thing that I'm looking for is, you know, we create all of these backstories and these ideas and try to understand where each one of these characters is coming from, and you only get X amount of time to do it. But I think if you really were given full play to really break down each piece of where somebody starts and where somebody ends, on a larger scale, like I said, limited series or even a full movie as a lead or whatever, just something that gives me the chance to see more of the character. And then the other side is, I've always wanted to do comedy. Comedy stuff I look at and I'm like, you know, I would just love to go on that set where you could just play and play and play all day long. It just looks fun. And I like the challenge of comedy. I think so many people, they look at comedy and they're like, oh, that must be so easy. But comedy is probably one of the hardest things out there. But once you kind of pick up on little things, you're like, oh, this is cool. And this is crazy what gets a laugh, what doesn't get a laugh. And I think the feedback in comedy is so instantaneous that side of it's kind of what you're looking for as a performer.
Yeah, and you mentioned the limited series thing. That's, and we're kind of moving into that realm of most things and streaming and whatnot. I mean, three seasons, that's pretty much it. And now they're on, you know, be it Netflix or Hulu or whatever. So you're no longer you're no longer looking at, hey, as long as we get this thing to run, you know. I was just talking to my kids. I said, man, like reruns used to be a big thing back in the day. You know, you work on a series long enough, that thing goes into syndication. That's great money on the back end. But you mentioned comedy. What were you watching growing up? What kind of things were you, be it movies or TV shows? What was your jam?
It's, you know, the stuff that was always running in the background for comedy. And I guess you don't realize as a kid how much it influenced you, and stuff that you saw was the reruns of like Seinfeld. You know, I remember, you know, Seinfeld had that 4:30, 5 o'clock slot, and it was like on TV while mom and dad were cooking dinner, you know? So it was, Seinfeld was there. And then I've actually revisited some of those comedies from that era that I was like Frasier, I thought was the driest, most boring show in the world when I was a kid. And I've gone back and rewatched Frasier. The show's hilarious. It's such a great show. My wife and I kind of cycle through different comedies, and she likes to watch something nice and like light before bed. So we cycle through comedies that are, you know, 20 minutes long. So that's something like that. So the ones growing up were probably Seinfeld. And then as I got older, one that I always circle back to that I find hilarious, but I think it has a very specific time period, was New Girl on Fox. I found that show hilarious just because I looked at those.
I never saw that. That's another reason why I love like Netflix and all that, because these shows show up there. I'm like, oh, there's so much stuff out there now. It's almost impossible to watch everything.
Yes.
And I kind of like that because I still haven't watched Game of Thrones. So I'm like, oh, that could still be new to me.
You haven't watched any of it, really.
Yeah, it's like some things just life or whatever else, and having kids, you know, you have to be diplomatic. And, you know, something we...
Well, it's a commitment too for some of them. It's just like, I mean, Game of Thrones, my goodness, it's, you know, to commit yourself to that entire show is just, that is a task in and of itself.
What kind of... movies were you watching growing up, or what kind of, I mean, even now, what are you liking to check out?
So one person, I was talking about this the other day with someone, one person that I had no idea until somebody asked me, you know, somebody that I followed, and, you know, the person that has such an amazing resume of films, and for some reason I saw so many of them just by chance, was Christian Bale. If you look at everything that he's been in, it's just, they're so wide ranging, and the characters that he plays are so all over, but when you start to go through it, you're like, oh no, I've seen that one. Oh, I've seen that, you know, and he's done so much.
Like when you see it when you're younger, it's almost like seeing it with new eyes a few years later, you know. What was that one movie he was in, American, but I remember this one scene, was it him who's doing that thing where he's going over like the zen of a business card and like the paper stock that goes into American Psycho.
Was that I should know this as well.
American Psycho?
Yes, okay. It was American Psycho. Yeah,
he's a phenomenal actor. But you're digging on the comedy, what kind of comedy movies or
looking back at comedies, you know, I think comedies are tough in the sense when you look back on them, especially movies, because they're very period set, you know. I mean, I was in college at a certain time where, you know, Will Ferrell had his run at all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, you have your, you know, and there was a period of that. And it, you look back at them now and watch them and they're like, okay, is this the funniest thing you've ever seen? Probably not. But at the time in college, you thought it was hilarious.
Oh, man, so, anything Judd Apatow is doing with Will Ferrell. I mean, absolutely, Anchorman. And it's just so ridiculous. And when I'm teaching voiceover to students, I'm like, listen, you got to buy in, man. It's like when you're doing comedy, you can't like wink, wink. It's like he's totally bought in. It's like the ridiculousness that like 60% of the time works all the time, you know. Sorry, I could quote right. Anchorman all day. But, you know, going forward, I mean, that's, you know, as far as what you're looking to do, and what you're doing now, how did Where the Crawdads Sing land in your lap there? Just happened to be you're in New Orleans, they were shooting here, or was that something that you were pursuing?
It was somewhat of a combination of that, and I didn't really realize this until everything had wrapped and whatnot, when I put together the things that were in my life and the things that were in my character, the character that I played, Jody's life. And I think it was just kind of harmonious that there were a lot of similarities in terms of our overall, you know, values and the way we look at life. Not necessarily the things we experienced. Jody, the character, experienced some very extreme things that he had to deal with, but I think our similarities were the way we deal with adversity. And I think, you know, some people say that, you know, there's just certain characters that are perfect for people. And I look at that with Jody, where, you know, he has this very stoic kind of go after it approach to life. And, you know, he doesn't allow things to kind of get him down. And I see that in myself. You know, I think adversity for me has kind of honestly been something that was very, something that I went after. When I ran into adversity, it just kind of made me try harder. And Jody was very much like that. So, I don't know, I guess just perfect timing with all of it, really.
It's kind of like that quote, I'm probably misquoting it, but it's like a sailor doesn't become learn how to become a captain in calm seas or something. Was it, you know, that kind of thing?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
What was the experience like shooting it? Was it, like you're saying that you kind of really identified with your character?
You know, it was, first of all, I think the nicest thing was, you know, touching on Daisy is, I guess, walking onto a set and meeting someone, you have certain expectations and you're just not sure how that's going to go. But Daisy was the most welcoming person and the nicest person, and almost went out of her way to just make everybody feel as though they were a part of it. And I think that I probably wouldn't have accomplished what I did in the film without her, because I felt so comfortable with her from day one. But also in shooting it, it was, you know, it wasn't always easy either. Day one, I showed up and I had to shoot my biggest scene, which just in and of that, you know, is intimidating having to do that. But it was kind of a trial by fire where I really was like, okay, you know, we're doing this and we're going to work through this, and you just have to get comfortable very quick.
Whenever I hear stories from actors about how things are shot out of sequence, it's not in sequences, you know, it's not a linear thing, and they show up the first day, they meet their you know, somebody they act with, and there's got to be some kind of romantic scene. It's like, you know, you're thrown right into the fire. So I always wonder what that's like. So,
right.
So you have to ramp up really fast. So do you still have any kind of aspiration to do the modeling thing again? Or is that kind of, it was just a step to be where you are right now? Or is there some things you still like?
You know, I think that there are some things that I still like about it. You know, I think the actual true fashion side of modeling, I think that there is an interest. I think each person has their own individual tastes and, you know, overall style, that I do like that side of it. And I'd like to be part of it in some sense like that, where I guess you can't really pick and choose as a model, but I would like to be more picky in terms of what I work, just because there are certain brands and what they're doing and images that they're putting out there that I really support that.
Now, did your closet fill up with stuff when you were doing this? Or were you like coming home with wardrobe and whatnot?
You know, that is the biggest modeling misconception. Like we as models, you get nothing, not a single thing from set. I mean, the number of shoots that I came home with something was maybe, you know, 1 in 30 or something like that. It really wasn't anything. And I always thought it was funny, because I think about these brands and I'm like, well, you'd think you'd want your clothing on these people. But then when you start to look at the actual business side of it, they're all samples and none of this clothing has come out yet. So they need all of this clothing to continue working through ramping up the line, going into production and going into stores and everything. But yeah, it's funny. I wish we got half the stuff, but not necessarily how it works.
Yeah. My grandfather worked in that industry to a degree. He wasn't a model. He worked on the sales side. So they always have these intermittent sample sales. You know, like these guys I remember it's the Dallas Apparel Mart. You would get real, essentially fashionable stuff for almost nothing. And, you know, I'm not fashionable, yeah. So I didn't qualify. So question, do you miss New York? Are you kind of hoping to get back up there as your home base, or are you kind of digging being down in the New Orleans area?
You know, there are things about New York that I do miss. I think New York is a very inspiring city. I kind of like the relationship that I have with it now, in the sense that I can pop in and pop out. being in New York City in spurts can be, you know, like I said, very inspiring, and you're just surrounded by this energy in New York that people talk about. And I still feel it to this day whenever I go back. But that energy can also be very draining if you're there, you know, long term as your base too. So I kind of like the relationship that I have now. And, you know, I like the relationship that I have with New Orleans as well. It's New Orleans is a special city, and it's a cool, cool place. I was talking to somebody the other day about New Orleans, and I was like, you know, the thing about New Orleans that I love is the same thing that I love about European cities, in the sense that you can walk around New Orleans with nowhere to actually go, and you just see all these homes and everything with all this history, and it's beautiful. It's the same sense as walking around Paris, is you don't have to have somewhere you need to go in Paris, and you can just walk around looking at all the buildings thinking it's amazing. And I think New Orleans kind of has that vibe on a certain level.
Yeah. Now, did your wife grow up in New Orleans proper?
No, she didn't. She grew up on the North Shore, so she was outside of it.
I know at least one my youngest daughter is going to ask, like, did she go to my school? Because that's a big thing people don't understand out. You know, you ask anybody anywhere in the country, hey, where'd you go to school? They always tell you, I went to University of Texas or whatever have you. Now, here they tell you what high school they went to. All the Catholic schools here.
It's the craziest thing. And, you know, every single person that my wife meets somewhere else that they find out they're from New Orleans, they will find a connection within 2 minutes of speaking to someone. It's like, you know, it is a big city, but for some reason it's so tight knit on a certain level too. And it is, it's all about the high schools, and that's the easiest way to figure out if you know someone.
Yeah. You're only like 2 degrees of separation from anybody, it seems like, you know, and I've been here on and off for like 3 years, and I've spent time in Southern California and back to Dallas, and I still have to use GPS to get to some parts of New Orleans because it follows the curve of the river. It's not laid out on a grid, and just mind-boggling. But so so how are you spending your days mostly? Are you doing traveling for work? Or are you just taking a little bit of a break?
Yeah, you know, as of late, we've been ramping up with press stuff for Crawdads. So I was up in the New York City area a couple weeks ago, and then some local stuff here. So it's a mix, and then obviously there's all the audition work too that I'm going through. So it's really ramping up for the movie, and then, you know, my day to day, and just kind of taking it easy. I've just learned to kind of take my, I've learned to take my, you know, my lulls in work have come easier. Before I would panic a lot whenever nothing was going on, but I've finally gotten to a point where I'm like, no, this is just kind of part of the flow. And I if I have nothing going on, I just kind of do something that I enjoy, get back to, you know, staying in shape or whatever I can, that just is kind of self maintenance.
Now I have to ask, because I mean, you know, this the whole New Orleans thing. Where are your, like, you have a top three places you like to hit to grab a bite to eat, and because you're with probably within walking distance of some good places, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm very, very much into within walking distance of Superior Seafood. I mean, their char grilled oysters and one of their their char grilled oysters. If you go in there for happy hour, char grilled oysters with a frozen French 75. That's a great way to start a night.
that seems to be the place where I take most people who come to town. I'm like, you know, they say, if I see the French Quarter once a year, that's a rarity. I never. People think, oh, you're all. It's kind of like people in New York saying, oh, do you go to Times Square all the time? Nope, you know, never see it.
A little bit. Yeah, it's there, and there is. There's New Orleans is funny. It's just I could list restaurants, and I'll speak to somebody the next day, and they'd be like, "Yeah, but have you been to XYZ?" And I've never even heard of it before. And there's so many great little spots that are just like hidden gems here that you're always finding something new.
A great date night for you and the wife. It's a place called the Delachaise, right off St. Charles, off the streetcar line. Delachaise near Touro Hospital. It runs perpendicular to St. Charles. They have a great wine selection. It's a little charcuterie boards. It's a great date place. Really, really dig it. But another thing here is people who live in New Orleans, you got to have your places you go to eat and your watering. I don't really go that to get drinks hardly ever. But yeah, you definitely got your places where you like to go grab a bite to eat or a burger or whatever. You know, you have your place and you're willing to drive to it. Superior, yes. Actually, on a Mexican restaurant down at the Superior Grill, I think, as well. So, but Superior Seafood, it's very on point.
Yes.
Now, the only thing we don't have, you had in New York, was we don't have a good deli. That's the one thing that just kills me because, you know,
York,
you have Katz's and all that. Me being a Jewish boy down south, it's painful sometimes, you know. I tried out a place who will remain nameless. Yeah. Everybody's like, you got to go there, you got to go there. Went in there, I was like, oh, dear Lord, this is just... It's just almost my kids and I, we all looked at each other. This is not good. You know? So it's
right. Yeah, there's just some stuff that doesn't live up. It's true, but New Orleans has its own take on food that, you know, it is not duplicatable elsewhere.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, I could talk food all day because you can kind of tell I haven't had lunch yet. My kids are having a bite to eat in there. I'm like, I was checking my teeth before I grabbed an Oreo before I came in here just to have something, you know. Now, where are the crawdads sing? That's coming out. Is it July 15th?
Correct. July 15th is the release. Yeah.
Do you have anything else in the can that's coming out after that?
Yeah, so actually, funny enough, it comes out about a week before it actually is. I have a role in Blackbird is what it's called, and that's actually a limited series for Apple. It's a little bit smaller of a role, but it's with Taron Egerton. And that one, I just recently saw the preview. I haven't been able to see my stuff yet, but the preview, it looks good. It's cool. It looks like a really, really suspenseful thriller that Apple TV is releasing.
Yeah, that's with Ray Liotta, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the last things he did.
He was one of the very first interviews I ever did back in, 93. He was the nicest guy, and right. But that looks like a great film. Greg Kinnear, I mean, who doesn't love Greg Kinnear, you know?
Yeah, it should be a really cool storyline. I'm excited for it. The period piece of it too. It was funny shooting in this house that it was just it was straight out of the 90s, and it was just wild walking into.
Oh, so it was a period. It was set in the 90s, you say?
So part of it. It was basically the storyline was through the 90s, and I was very much on the early portion of Taron Egerton's backstory a little bit. I played a high school friend of his, which was fun because you just have to, you know, I got to play this character that just never kind of grew up and was living in the glory days of high school football. So it's fun to kind of be that way for a little bit.
I did see you're going to be doing a Devotion. What's that about?
So Devotion follows the story of the first African-American, I'm not going to get the exact name right in terms of, but basically he was a pilot, but a certain portion of the armed forces. But he was the first African-American in that part of the armed forces. And it follows the story of him and everything that he experienced kind of traveling the world and everything. So I had a little role in there for that. Playing Nicky Hilton, which was cool, just seeing the whole set because it again is a period piece. That one should look great. I think they're intentionally separating it from Top Gun because there's some really great flying sequences and stuff in that film as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, before we wrap up, one of the things I always love to do is I have my 7 questions I like to kind of throw out. I kind of get to know you, just do it purely for fun. And I start off with one that is fortuitously a food question. But what's your favorite comfort food? That thing that you just always like to have around, or you had a rough day, you just sit down and go to town on it?
Comfort food. You know, maybe this isn't something at home, but I love authentic Mexican food. I will search out an authentic Mexican spot any day of the week. I don't know what it is. I love it. I grew up that way. And that's
you know, Colorado does have some good Mexican food. Now, Texas, I learned that there's a Texas style. There's like a New Mexico style. There's Southern California, but
right. There's a Tex-Mex.
Okay.
Yeah.
Best tacos. I'm going to give you, okay. You're right down the way. So I'm going to give you this Taqueria Corona. They're both, they're in Metairie. Taqueria Corona off.
They have a location on Magazine, and I was there on Friday night.
Very good, man.
No joke.
Man, see, the chorizo taco, lingua taco, man. That they are.
Yes.
Oh, that's, I'm telling you, that's about as close as you're going to get.
I'll say Val's too. It's kind of fancy Mexican, but Val's does really good tacos on Ferret. Val's is good.
I'll tell you what, the next question I got for you, if you're going to be sitting down with three people, you're going to have a cup of coffee, talk story for a few hours. Living or not, who would those three people be you'd like to sit down with?
Ooh, wow. So going back to my stoicism, I will say I think Marcus Aurelius would be very interesting just because of what he experienced in his stoic philosophy and whatnot. There's some like memoirs and stuff that I read that were literally just his diary. So he never really expected it to become public, but they're very, very interesting. And then... You know, a friend of mine believes this, and I think somebody that would be very interesting from his life experiences would have to be Barack Obama. I would love to sit down with that man. I think everything that he accomplished and his upbringing would be very, very interesting.
Well, he gets mentioned regularly here, without a doubt.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, I think that he, what he still accomplishes to this day, it would be a phenomenal person to sit down with. And then I'm trying to think, you know, I want to lean sports because I like sports. I'm going to throw out this one just because I'm such a big fan. I love Nikola Jokic from the Denver Nuggets. He's the Denver Nuggets center. He won back-to-back MVPs this year. Just give a shout-out to Denver. But Serbian basketball player that doesn't fit basketball standards and style, but I think he'd be a cool guy to talk
about. I was living in Dallas growing up, when I remember Mark Cuban buying the Mavericks, and people would be like, what is he doing with that team, man? That's like international... You know, so yeah, definitely. Dirk Nowitzki.
Yep. It's huge now. It's a big thing.
Yeah. Now, next question. Growing up, who was your first, your celebrity crush as a kid?
You know, the first one that comes to mind, I'm just going to say it just because it was that era, was Baywatch. So, of course, it was Anderson. You know, I mean, that was such an easy one because Baywatch was huge while I was a kid.
People were at number one TV show in the world for a while. Now, if you're going to be landing on an exotic island, you, the wife, you're going to be there for a year. And, it's a great place to be. You love being there, but you're not going to have any streaming or anything. You can't watch anything except for a DVD you bring with you and one album to listen to. What would that DVD and what would that album be?
Whew. Oh, wow. DVD, wow. It would have to be something that I could watch over and over, just in the sense that it would be intriguing. So this might be a weird one, but I'm going to say Inception, just because you could think about it a million different ways. So I'm going to say that one.
That's a great way of looking at it. Yeah. Anything Christopher Nolan does, you're going to be sitting there like it's a different movie each time, depending on your frame of mind. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Tenet, I can't get my mind around still, and I've watched it three or four times.
I still haven't seen that. I want to. It's streaming. I got to go watch it. It's on HBO Max, I think.
It's good. It's good. But again, you need a few views, which is even more, you know, more of a task. And then album, Jay-Z's Blueprint.
Very good. Why not? Very good. All right. Now, if you're going to say from the time you wake up to the time you put your head down on the pillow at night, definition of a perfect day for you, what would be that day? What would the component parts be of that day, that is?
Waking up with a very good cup of coffee, because nothing starts my day poorly is like a bad cup of coffee. It just with my books, I start every day with a coffee and some books that I just read a couple chapters of. And I think that that puts me in the right mindset. You know, a long walk with my wife and the dogs, just because I think walking is probably one of the best things anybody can do, A, on exercise, and B, mentally. It just kind of clears the head and puts you in the right place. And then, you know, probably just touching base with my parents. You know, I talk to my parents a lot. I talk to them almost every single day. And, you know, they're far away, but I think just being able to do that means something to me. And then some level of accomplishment. I think that, you know, there's something in there that the days that I actually go about really setting goals and I can kind of cross those all off the list, I just go to bed and sleep a little bit better at night. So I think some level of, you know, just goal to accomplish that day.
Very good. That comes up quite frequently. Just a good thing to get accomplished. I talked to Tommy Chong yesterday, and he said, just to get my garage clean, that would be a good day for me. It's like the little things that we kind of find that we just want to get done.
Right. It's truly, it's like my backyard, you know, everything grows like a jungle down here
about to go into high gear in a moment. Yeah. Now, if last couple questions, if you weren't acting, if you hadn't modeled, if anything entertainment, if none of this was really, well, let's just say if acting and modeling was not on the radar, what would your vocation be? What would you want it? Do you think you would find joy doing?
You know, there was a point in time and I did almost head in that direction. And I think if I was looking for just it's something that just gives me a level of satisfaction with what I'm doing with my life is I almost went into teaching for a little while. I'm not sure exactly what level I would have wanted to do it, but I liked that idea. You know, I think helping youth and, you know, being around those type of minds and growing them is important. So I think teaching would have been nice if I could do anything.
I'm in the same boat with you. I think teaching, there's a zen to it. You know, it's kind of like we're all, to some degree, encyclopedias of something. It's kind of nice to share. With me, it's just a bunch of BS, but you know. Now, last question. If you could jump in a DeLorean, you travel back, you're 16 years old, you got a couple minutes with 16-year-old Logan, and you got some wisdom, you got some knowledge, you got a piece of advice that you really think you should share with 16-year-old you, what would it be?
I would just say keep your, you know, don't let your lows get too low. Don't let your highs get too high. I think, you know, I think especially in this type of industry, there's things that give you a big head, and then there's a lot of rejection that comes in there too, that I think if you can keep just that steady level and consistency through everything, it'll go a very long way. There's some days that I'm like, man, if I could just keep this mindset every single day, I'd just the overall vibe I'm getting off would change things immensely. So I think it's just that consistency of being in a, you know, just a good place.
You know, it's funny when you look back on, when I look back with perspective, I kind of think the same thing. You know, it's like no matter how bad you thought something was in hindsight, it wasn't really that bad, you know?
My latest trick is, you know, just kind of like pulling back, you know, just think about it on a larger scale. And does it matter to what's taking place? Would it matter to anyone else if you told them what the issue was? And you realize, you know, your problems are so minute that it's not worth actually wasting the effort and worry about.
Indeed. Well, my friend, I certainly appreciate you just taking time out. I mean, it's what a kind of a treat it was to connect with somebody to New Orleans and get a chance to talk about food while I'm hungry. So, you know, there you go.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's dinner time now, right?
My friend, thank you again for your time. And, you know, next time you're down having a taco at Taqueria Corona, think of me fondly. But by all means, hopefully you'll have a chance to catch up down the line.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mark.
All right. There you go. Logan McRae, really enjoyed speaking with him, of course. Talked food. That seems to show up a lot. You know me. So now I'm hungry. I got to run and go grab a bite to eat, but I wanted to thank you for joining me for another episode. Don't forget, if you would, to stop by storyandcraftpod.com. Once again, storyandcraftpod.com. Like the show, subscribe, give a review. Great shows coming up in the next few weeks. Got some really interesting people stopping by. And of course, feel free to shoot me a note when you go to the website. You can shoot me a message, even a voicemail. It's kind of a neat deal. So tell you what, I'm going to get on out, grab a bite. You have yourself a great rest of your day. Appreciate you being here more than you know. And we'll be back next time for another episode of Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story.